listening to the Warden Alumni Executive Education Podcast.
Hello and welcome everyone to the Warden Alumni Executive Education Podcast. I am your host, Alex Gromatsky, and today I'm going to be talking to Michael Brule, who is currently Chief Business Systems Officer at Credit Human. He's worked at many different companies in the past, but started his career at the United States Air Force, and we're going to be diving into his story, and it's great to have you on today, and how are you doing?
Doing great. Thanks for having me, Alex.
Appreciate it. So tell me more about what you're doing at Credit Human and how you ended up being a Chief Business Systems Officer over there and what your career path has been.
Yeah, absolutely. I came to Credit Human about 8 years ago now. I've been here for a little while and kind of just fell in love with the mission and vision. It's definitely a purpose-driven company. We're really focused on that. The Chief Business Systems Officer role is a little unique in how we handle technology and how we handle sort of solving problems, business unit challenges. And so really what that is, because it's one of those titles that people don't really know what that means exactly. And so I have to unpack it every time I'm at a conference or engaging with people. They're like, what exactly do you do? I always say it's basically the solution side of IT, if you will. So we work really closely with the business units and understanding their problems and challenges, trying to be proactive in identifying them ourselves as well, and then bringing the resources to bear to solve those. So the teams in business systems are things like applications development, app dev, infrastructure design, business analysts, research and development, and really leveraging any external resources as well, whether that's professional services or vendors, to come in on specific projects so we can leverage that technology to help the business units.
And before that, though, you have an interesting career because you used to be at the United States Air Force when you first initially started. So how did you go from being at the Air Force to then having a career in this area?
Yeah, it's been a little bit of a circuitous pathway. It started off first job out of college was with the Air Force. I always joke, like I came into my first job out of college and the first week I was there, the captain who was over the two flights gets sent overseas. And the first lieutenant billet wasn't filled. So I'm a second lieutenant that doesn't, I don't know anything, right? I don't know which way's up. And all of a sudden I'm in charge of almost 40 grown professionals that know what they're doing. And I'm sitting there going like, you guys put me in charge? You think this is a good idea, really? Luckily enough, of course, the Air Force has a great mentorship program. So I had a senior master sergeant, Griffin, who was my mentor and made sure I didn't lead us off a cliff somewhere. But came into that. It was a great opportunity, of course, not just leading troops, but being, learning how to manage, learning how to lead from somebody like Senior Master Sergeant Griffin, who was so senior tenured and kind of took me under his wing. And then the second part, when I was in the Air Force, I transitioned to AETC headquarters and, classic sort of military approach. It's like, oh, well, now you've been in the military for 2 years, Lieutenant, why don't we put you over these $100 million defense systems? That seems like a great thing. You know, you got 2 years of experience, right? And so it was interesting. And I was in the military for about 4.5 years. And the experience I had there was just a crash course in managing and leadership and really just collaborating, working with people. I think that's a big misconception people have about the modern military is that it's this sort of 1950s behemoth, top-down, hierarchical, you take your orders and you take the hill. And that is not the military of today. The military today is very collaborative, and you have to influence people across the spectrum. And so I think coming out of the military is a great opportunity, but just looking to do maybe different things in my career path. And so ended up getting into IT consulting, eventually ended up taking kind of an interesting pathway at a different time in my life in did a little bit of acting out in Los Angeles. I ended up starting my own company out there, sold that, came on to another startup out there and eventually relocated back to Texas and got plugged in with Credit Human. Again, I think there's a few real strong kind of pivots throughout this pathway of my life/career. And I think it reflects sort of evolving values along the way. So happy to be here, you know, doing what I'm doing right now. It's definitely been a journey that no one saw coming, including me.
Yeah, for sure. Those do sound like some interesting pivots that you've taken along the way. What made you want to leave the United States Air Force? You know, looking over $100 million plus defense budget looks kind of interesting, or sounds very interesting to me at least. And then going into consulting role, why make the changes?
Yeah, I mean, the military definitely has a lot to offer. And I think I got a ton out of it. And the challenges there are so real, right? They just throw you in neck deep, and it's such a great opportunity because they 100% do not shy away from giving you challenges and seeing if you can rise to it. At that point in my career, I was really looking to, I would say, transition to something that I felt like I had a little bit more control over in terms of getting my hands kind of wholly around it. And so made that decision to get out of the United States Air Force was not an easy one, for sure. And I'd been in ROTC at Notre Dame before that. So I'd sort of kind of ramped up into military and knew what I was getting into. And also just coming from a military family, I've got, you know, more uncles and aunts and everybody that's in the military than you can shake a stick at. Definitely was excited about sort of that next chapter outside of the military, but didn't take it lightly at all.
And acting is a completely different side that you mentioned and touched on. Were you in anything that anyone might have seen, or how did that acting career go?
Yeah, it's funny because it really, you know, I know this is the Wharton kind of podcast, Alex, and I've listened to a bunch of these in preparation for this conversation, if you will. I didn't want to come in blind to what you're gonna throw at me here. It's interesting because I'll say that's kind of a chapter of my life that I definitely never really highlighted, especially in sort of a work context. And it was really I'm from the Advanced Management Program 83, the AMP 83 program. And it was really in that program that some of my peers encouraged me to really embrace that a little bit more holistically. Did you go through the AMP program, or did you go through which one?
I went through the GMP program, but they did have an option for us to actually practice some acting as well in one of those.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't end up doing the acting because that sounded terrifying and not up my alley, but
it is terrifying. No, but we do an exercise at the end of the whole program where everyone gets in this giant circle and you talk about one individual that really kind of resonated with you. And it's interesting because the person that I picked, Sayatan, who's president of Reddington out of United Arab Emirates, what really resonated with me with him was he had this whole other thing he was doing outside of work that he had built with friends around creating movies and all his content. And then the person that picked me, Rafa, who's he's a CFO for a petroleum company in Brazil, he said what resonated with him was that I had taken these sort of hard pivots and made these sort of, you know, really bold decisions. And it's so interesting because I didn't think of it that way. I thought of it as like this thing that maybe I shouldn't talk about in sort of a professional setting. People would, it just wasn't, you know, it wasn't sort of on brand, so to speak. And he really brought it out and encouraged me to like, no, this is great. Like, this is something different. This is demonstrates all these different characteristics that otherwise people wouldn't know. So I kind of, the AMP program really made me reevaluate, I guess, how I looked at that whole time of my life, that whole chapter. And no, I got into it. I was working out in Los Angeles. And like I always say, if you've ever been in LA, the whole ecosystem there sort of revolves around the quote unquote industry of, you know, acting and making movies and TV shows and all that sort of good stuff. And sort of had a lot of friends in that space. And before I knew it, I was, you know, participating in it and was lucky enough to be on a few different things, had a little role on Grey's Anatomy and a little recurring thing on Scandal. So a couple little small things. The Oscars were not coming knocking, let's just say that. Let's not oversell this, but it was interesting. It was definitely a learning experience. And surprisingly, I think there's some skills you can actually translate from that into the corporate world.
I didn't know the title of the episode. Grey's Anatomy star and Scandal star. No, Wharton alumni.
You better not.
No, we won't. But that's a really interesting story. So way more prominent than I thought on the shows you're on. I don't know what your roles were, but definitely shows I've both seen episodes of. So really cool on that side of things.
Very small roles.
Yeah, all good. But really cool to at least have been a part of that and seen some of that as well. So then jumping into the credit human side, so it sounds like you're dealing with a lot of vendors, or is a lot of the stuff internally that you guys are trying to develop and manage?
It's a little bit of both, in that we definitely leverage vendors heavily. Yet, because our mission and vision is a little bit outside the mainstream of financial institutions, we find ourselves having to be really creative with how we are building products and services. So it can't just be sort of an off-the-shelf plug-in from a vendor, because we're not just a plug-and-play type of shop with the products and services we have, which poses unique challenges, which I think is a good thing. You know, if we're doing the same products and services everyone else is doing, I'm not sure there's a much differentiation opportunity there.
Are you able to dive into some of the specifics of the projects that you'd work on to give a better understanding of like what it exactly is that some of the final outputs are?
Yeah, I mean, some of the things we're really targeting are, like, we have a loan product right now, which I think is really unique into the space, where we will let people, you know, traditionally if people are applying for a home loan, they have to put, you know, their money down, or they have to pay the PMI consequences for insurance on those properties. Like, we have a product that leverages where basically you're putting your money into that upfront. Or I shouldn't say upfront, you're putting your money into that, and we're allowing you to not pay that penalty throughout. So we're kind of like trying to help you build the term we would use is financial slack. So we're trying to help the customer build that financial slack throughout the utilization of that product. We're also one of the absolute best players in when it comes to fees. We're not a fee shop at all. You know, you see some of the litigation that's been changing nationally around fee structures and limitations. And I would say Credit Human has just been one of the leaders in that space for years and years, because we do not feel it's representative of our values to be sort of, you know, nickel and diming people with fees all over the place. And one of the things I can say about that with a lot of pride is our CEO, our board, like, they take that mission and vision so seriously. It's not just lip service. It's not just sort of on a wall somewhere. It's truly, if you ever walked into our headquarters in San Antonio, Texas, you know, and my CEO or someone on the board caught you in the hallway, they would very enthusiastically and sincerely talk to you about our mission and vision and what it means for us. And, you know, everyone's worked at a lot of different companies over their career, and we've worked at companies, I think, where you can see that those core values resonate more. And maybe we've worked at other companies where it's sort of like, oh, it's on a wall, that's great. And yeah, we do something else kind of, but that's fine. And at Credit Human, it's not that way at all. It really is, like I said, right from the top. The board and the CEO are so highly engaged and make sure we're charting that path.
And do you spend a lot of your time on like the customers, or who do you spend most of your time talking to figure out what you're supposed to be doing and focusing on for your role?
Yeah, my role really focuses a lot on my internal customers. So I work a lot with the business unit leaders, whether that's, you know, direct lending and consumer side, or commercial lending or deposits, wherever it is, like, I'm working with the business unit leader within the organization. Yeah, and of course, we're always keeping one eye open to voice of member feedback. So that's definitely something we've really put a focus on in the short term, to make sure we're capturing what the customer is saying back to us through different channels. So, that's not really the point or the tip of the spear for what Business Systems does. But I would say it's the tip of spear for what Credit Human's doing. And as the business units hear that voice of member feedback, they definitely bring it to bear when we're talking about what products and services we want to bring forward.
So you have to work a lot of across a lot of cross-functional units, and then try to consolidate some of the information, how they might or might not work together. And then maybe think about what solutions can be proposed based on the needs of those different business units.
Yeah, you said it way better than I did, Alex.
I'm just trying to ask the questions.
No, that's good. Absolutely.
Yeah, no, fair enough on that side of things. So what are the things that you enjoy working on from that side of things? Or what are the units that are, you know, more interesting than less interesting, without throwing on any of the units under the bus to say that they're boring? But
yeah, you know, it's interesting because some of the stuff that people might not think is exciting can be really engaging for us. Things like fraud, leveraging AI and machine learning on the fraud side of things is something we're looking to do in 2024 with a new product called Jack Henry Crimes Defender, as well as on the lending side. We're partnering with Zest AI, and three of our different lending portfolios will be using that, which is really interesting because it's using AI technology to underwrite loans for three of our different portfolios in a way that allows us to hopefully go deeper into that funnel than we previously have been. And what I mean by that is when we talked to them, and we basically gave them, these are the loans that we've been approving in 2023. They took an analysis and they said, okay, these are ones that you approved that maybe we think you shouldn't have approved, but here are some loans you didn't approve that we think you could have approved, because they're looking so much more holistically at the member, at the customer there. And so what's exciting about that is being able to offer more loans to people that maybe wouldn't be getting them through traditional, FIs, and being able to give them that opportunity, which is absolutely aligned with what we're trying to do mission and vision wise.
And are most of your loans focused on residential home loans, or do you also go into commercial loans?
Yeah, we sort of have a full suite of loans. We have started up the commercial side just a couple of years ago. We'd had it years and years and years ago, and it had gone away, and we've just sort of rebooted that recently. But on the retail side, yeah, absolutely, sort of all the normal loan products you would expect there. I think we build them a little bit more uniquely, but yeah, absolutely. Whether you're talking HELOCs or home loan, loans for construction, all the different sort of loan portfolios, and even manufactured housing. We have a very significant manufacturer and MH home loan portfolio, which is a little bit different because traditional banks don't usually play in that space. It's more of a credit union opportunity. Even indirect auto is more of a credit union space.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting that you talked about loans that you shouldn't have approved, which seem more obvious when the mm-hmm. client, but the idea of loans that you should have got approved. So how do you even get data on that information? I guess you have to follow the client through the customer journey. If they're with you, seeing how they're performing on their loans, how they would have performed on other loans, or do you monitor the property that they were thinking about buying and see who provided that loan? How does that process really play out? That's a little bit over my head.
Yeah, it's interesting because from the AI engine perspective of how you're building it and fine tuning your AI engine, on the front end, really, they're looking at thousands more data points than a traditional FICO score or underwriting would look at. So there's sort of the front end analysis of what should or shouldn't, I'll put air quotes there, be approved. And then there's the continuing evolution of that as you're updating your model, your AI model around charge-offs. And so I think there's sort of where you stand initially with what they're recommending you being approved. And of course, saying like should be approved is kind of an arbitrary term. It sort of depends on your risk appetite and where you want to set those bars. But when we talked to Zest AI and when we said, okay, this is our risk posture, they're letting us know inside of those parameters that we've set, and we can adjust them over time, that there's some dissonance of members and customers that they believe we have an opportunity to offer loans to that are very secure within our risk parameters. So it does evolve over time with charge-offs, but you're also able to fine-tune it yourself.
And this might be a little bit too detailed, but I read something about government legislation talking about that certain areas or zip codes or demographics are not being approved based on some form of prejudice. How are you guys dealing with that? And is there really a requirement to lend out money to a diversified pool of assets if that risk profile is higher based on, I don't want to use stereotypes, but yeah.
it's really important. Well, one, there's certain laws out there against that, right? So that's just starting ground. Two, we 100% are leaning into the communities that I would argue other institutions are more reticent to loan to. For example, we have a financial health center on the east side of San Antonio. That would be traditionally what is referred to as a banking desert, the east side of San Antonio. There, the big players don't have banks and financial institutions there, not because they don't know where the east side of San Antonio is. Okay, they don't have those they don't have their footprint there because they've decided it's not profitable enough for them. Well, we're there deliberately because we believe it's part of our reason to exist. We believe that's part of our mission and vision to be a part of that community in a meaningful way. And is it necessarily the most quote unquote profitable? Well, we would argue through our metrics, we don't just look at profit as in terms of success. Yes, it's a metric we look at, but we also look at other metrics. And one of those is being a part of that type of a community where we can really make a difference. It's a unique experience because there's not a lot of players in the space over there. So I would say some institutions are looking to split hairs a little bit more in terms of where they're making loans, where they're participating, and that's really driven by profit. I would argue the credit union space in general and Credit Human specifically definitely focuses less on profits. Not that it doesn't matter, because it does. Of course, you have to be profitable. You have to be able to turn on lights and keep the business running, of course. But we also, you know, in parallel with that, really focus on making a difference in these communities that maybe others tend to shy away from. So those types of loans that you're talking about, targeting different areas or groups of people, we 100% lean into making sure that we're participating in that. And from an AI's perspective, can bring it back to Zest AI and technology. There's different ways that they're working through that. I think it's still a little bit of an unknown for how the regulators are going to, come to grips with some of the new technology on the market, specifically AI and machine learning. But there are certain ways you can, build one AI to regulate another AI, essentially. So you're having one drive your loan decisioning, and then you're having a different separate standalone AI evaluating the first one around is it making any decisions that are contrary to bias, because you want to make sure you're not having bias in that decisioning process against any group. And so there's ways to leverage the technology to ensure you don't have bias built into it by accident, essentially.
So you have quantitative and qualitative KPIs that you look at from that perspective. And on the regulatory side, it seems like you guys are already focused and leaning into that and aware of that. Would you say that other companies just have not been aware of it, or is it just profit driven, or is there something else going on as on that side as well? Because if I think about it as an individual, if I were to loan out money, it seems a little bit strange that I'm told by the government I have to lend out money to these people as well. So it's a little bit interesting from that perspective, but it'd be great to have your thoughts on that.
Yeah, you're not wrong in that. I think it seems a little counterintuitive from maybe a wide open capitalist perspective. I worked for a lot of different companies in different industries before I came to the financial space. And I think it was a little bit eye-opening to me, like, oh, what are the rules? You've got to do, you can't just go over here and target your most profitable people. And the answer is no, you can't. The regulations are set up in such a way for all financial institutions cannot simply target certain areas. And like I said, I think the banking space is a little different than the credit union space in that regard, or a lot different than the credit union space in that regard. And even in the credit union space, I think there's a whole spectrum of how much people, kind of focus on that specific value. I don't want to, speak bad about any other institution, but I will speak good about my institution. And I would say it really resonates with me. And it was one of the reasons that really, you know, brought me to Credit Human and has had me stay here for so long is that, like I said before, we are a mission, you know, vision driven company. And if, and I always talk to this with people when we're interviewing them, if working for a company that you want to necessarily just like make the top, you know, profit dollars for you, then maybe we're not. And we, you know, we pay very well, but I would argue our value proposition really lies with people that are passionate about making a difference in their communities, not to be cliche, but working for a purpose-driven institution is really, I think, our value proposition.
Yeah, because you've been at Credit Human for over 8 years now, and it sounds like you like the culture, you like the people that you work with, you like the role that you have because it seems to be cross-functional and gets you involved in many different components. But what are the things that really drive you and motivate you?
I really like building teams. I like working collaboratively with people. I mean, my background before I came to Credit Human was in the startup space. And so, you know, being innovative, you know, I would say we need to continue to challenge ourselves to push that needle and make sure, one, we're promoting innovation within the culture and, you know, really pushing the needle, because everyone can get a little lethargic around that. And it's always a challenge to make sure you're being proactive with the innovation and pushing it forward. You know, those are the things that I really enjoy, kind of working in that space of ambiguity. You know, some people, I think they get people in that ambiguity space, and some people sort of seize up for a second. Like, I'm definitely one that leans in to it. And so that's what drew me to startups beforehand. And that's what I really enjoy about my role today, is being allowed to do a lot of that work.
Yeah, because going from the U.S. Air Force to then the startup world after a little bit, that's a massive change, going from, I think, one of the largest employers in the world to, you know, startups being one of the smallest employers in the world. What was that difference like for you?
Yeah, it was very different, obviously. And I came into the startup space a little organically. I had the first year I was in Los Angeles, I racked up over $1,500 in parking tickets. And I very quickly realized that was not sustainable or just smart. And so I searched for a solution to it. Being a technologist, I just assumed like there must be an app to make this easier for me. Couldn't find one. And so eventually decided to create my own, and built ParkSafe LA. And, you know, I do some work now with 3DS, 3-Day Startup. It's a sort of a mentorship program for entrepreneurs here in Texas. And I always talk about a pain point versus an inconvenience. And what you really want to be solving pain points, because that's where there's a lot of juice for new products and services. And so when I was even talking about the idea of ParkSafe LA, I was at the airport and I got a phone call from this writer for the LA Times, and they were doing an article on predatory parking ticket practices in Los Angeles. And she was asking me, like, "Hey, I heard you built this app. This is so exciting." And she's going on and on. And at the time, I hadn't built the app yet. So at the time, I'm like, "Oh," I was thinking to myself, "I got to build this thing. I got to get off my backside and code this thing up." And I am not the best coder out there. Trust me. I know good coders, even in college. Like, I know good coders. It's like the Matrix, and the ones and zeros are flying past their head and they're in the zone. And for me, it was more like banging my head against a rock. Right. But eventually I coded it up, and, you know, I'm telling you, the second it went live, because it was such a pain point for Los Angelians, because it was such a pain point, it goes live. And, you know, within 2 weeks, you know, Fox News, NPR, LA Times, all these people are contacting us out of nowhere that want to do interviews and learn about the product and the whole thing. And so, and eventually, you know, it did very well. And we ended up partnering with the mayor of Los Angeles on some projects that he had around parking, and really learned a lot in the process, but definitely very exciting to start your own company and see it grow and the product be so well received.
Yeah, that sounds incredible. I don't think I know of many startups that, you know, get so many news agencies reaching out to them to promote it. That's like free marketing. That's the best type of marketing that
you can get. It was fantastic. All my friends that were in the startup space, they were like, why did they contact you? And I'm like, I don't know. I had some frustrated friends.
My assumption is because it's newsworthy and it's controversial and has some of those talking points and it gets people angry, which moves them and clicks on it. So
exactly.
Yeah. That's interesting from that perspective. What did the app really do? Like, I know.
What the app would do is I would always joke in Los Angeles, it's people are getting tickets and a lot of them aren't getting tickets because they're intentionally parking illegally. You could roll up to a sign and look at it for 15 minutes and go, I don't know. Can I park here right now? I just don't know. I'm looking at five signs on top of each other. The second sign seems to contradict the fourth sign. And, you know, it's very confusing, quite frankly. And so what the app would do is you could take a picture of it. It could tell you, you know, whether you could park there or you couldn't park there. And if so, for how long, then kind of simplify that whole process for you.
Oh, no way. Okay, so it does simplify things on that side of things. I haven't spent much time in LA, so good to know. I've never really had to deal with that side of things.
Well, and what was interesting about it was over 50% of the sales actually came overseas, which was completely unexpected. Like overseas, especially China at the time. We're like, "What? Why are all these people in China buying our app?" At the time, specifically just for Los Angeles. And our hypothesis around it was people were coming in, you know, visiting Los Angeles for extended periods of time, renting cars, and they would buy the app as part of that sort of simplification process, which was a whole separate market, if you will, than we'd ever thought it would exist for a product like that.
Well, especially if your English is not your first language and you're trying to figure out what does any of this really mean.
Exactly. Yeah. Like we're here, you know, Americans born and bred, and we can't figure out the signs. If you're coming from any other country, you don't have a chance. It's so confusing.
Yeah, exactly. And especially if I think about China and people being very much rule following, complying with government and being told they don't want to be breaking any rules on that side of things. So why take the risk? Very interesting. I had no idea that we were going to be getting into your startup world. Yeah. Well, I appreciate your time today. I'm grateful that we touched on your experience in the Air Force, your startup world, what you're currently doing, getting into the side of loans and NSFs and fees and all those types of things. Was there anything that we didn't touch on in your career or in your life that you want to go over briefly?
No, I think we hit everything pretty well.
Awesome. Well, then I appreciate your time and it was great talking to you and meeting you.
Great talking to you too, Alex. Thank you.
Thank you.